be.
Yeah, when that robot voice pops in, you know it's time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
DLC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. We're going to be with you in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free, thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. They bring the show to you. Their generosity, their kindness, their support of this show makes it possible. And in exchange, they get some cool stuff, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and tons of bonus content, including a bonus show we call Feeling This with Christian Spicer and Alex Solman, giving you the feelings behind video games. We got a whole first season of that show available on demand right now for patrons. And season two is being recorded, so you have that to look forward to. Plus, you got bonus chats. We're going to be doing the DLC book club. And for Cool Ranch level patrons on Wednesdays, oh, you get the wackiness, the fun, the zaniness that is the paid DLC program, where Christian Spicer, myself, and Lana Bashinsky get together and talk about whatever we happen to be talking about. It's a wild, fun time. People love it. And you can experience it by supporting the show at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host, slash nemesis, and still intercontinental champion, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian. Welcome back.
Thank you. Hello, Jeff. Hello, listeners. And also up top, I want to say this was posted in our Discord, but not the super public place, so I'll keep names out of it. But to our friends in Arkansas, in the tornadoes and that terrible damage, I've seen, you know, we've seen the community, we empathize, we are here for you. That Discord is certainly a wonderful place to be with some great folks, but my goodness, we are glad you are safe, and holy crap, nature Indeed. Is a
yeah.
wild one.
I mean, it's, yeah, yes. Thank you for bringing that up. You also just got back from some travel. You were in Hawaii, right?
We were in Maui. We landed this morning at 1 a.m. and had a very busy day. And I'm very excited to be here talking video games and settling back into the routine, i.e. before tomorrow morning when I have to rip my children out of bed and send them to school, and they will not be happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that last week. We had our spring break the week before, so I've been through that already. It's fun. It's a delight. Hey, we got tons to talk about this week. Oh my goodness. The news is intense. There's a lot of it, and we got games to talk about. We got a bunch of VR to get to. Oh man, it's going to be a great show. And you know what? We have an awesome guest to do it with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, oh, I'm excited because DLC stands for distinctive learned capability. Because that's a technique. And we have the man known as Technique, actor, host, voice actor, Twitch ambassador, Amazon Luna ambassador. It's Frank Ellerby joining us for the first time. Hey, Frank.
Hey, how's it going, both of you? Thank you very much for having me here. And also to all the listeners, hello.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you. We've been wanting to have you on for a while. And man, what a week to do it. We got so much to dig into. Let's hop right in and start the show the way we always do. With Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send us comments, questions, anything you'd like us to know. We love hearing from you over there at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We also love when you take part in our communities. We have a subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. And we also have a Discord, as Christian already mentioned. Fantastic folks hanging out in the Discord. It's 5x5DLC on Discord as well. Join up, hang out, talk games and all sorts of other things. Be part of a great community in those places. But Technique, you are our guest. So you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I mean, we have to go with the unbearable news of the E3.
Yes.
That touches a deep place inside of my heart, because ever since I was little, I had to dream, or young, I should say, I had the dream of being at E3 or even hosting E3, and I got to do that multiple times, and it was a dream come true, and it was an experience that you can't really talk about. You just got to have to be there, you know, and that may not happen anymore. So
it certainly looks like this is the true death knell. You know, we've seen many times not knowing whether E3 was coming back. It has had this rocky last several years, obviously COVID having a big part of that, not having in-person events. But even before that, it felt like things were splintering. We were seeing the Nintendo directification of the entire industry. We had EA splitting off and doing their own thing, Microsoft splitting off, although it was right next door, so it was kind of still there, but it was still sort of splintering. We saw this percolating, this trend toward E3 kind of fraying at its edges, and we have spent many episodes over the last several years pontificating, speculating, wondering about the future of E3, whether it is ending. This year, it was lined up to make its big comeback. We had been hearing about E3. You know, it was being handled by the folks that did the PAXes. It was in new hands. It was going to come back with a vengeance. One of the hosts on this very show predicted, famously, in our annual predictions episode, that E3 was going to be a smashing success. I don't know who that might have been. Certainly wasn't me. And here we have an official cancellation from the ESA that 2023's E3 is not happening. Now, with the last several weeks, we've been hearing, you know, we knew Sony wasn't going to be there. Sony hasn't been at E3 in several years. We knew Microsoft wasn't going to be there. Microsoft hasn't been officially at E3 in several years. But the dominoes kept falling. We saw just last week, Ubisoft said, nope, we're not going. It really felt like all of the big publishers, Nintendo, who was a mainstay with a giant booth every year at E3, even if they were doing their tree houses and their live streams and their directs, they still were there on the show floor showing stuff with that double-decker booth that they always had. Nintendo said, not us this year. It felt like it was going to be a ghost town. ESA evidently saw the writing on the wall and just, instead of making it an excruciating experience for all involved, they just nixed it. Frank, you know, you outlined the fact that you've been to E3, you have hosted at E3. We can eulogize about it, and I want to do that. I think it's worthy of eulogizing. But before we get there, do you think this is it? Do you think this is finally, truly the end? They themselves, ESA, is saying, we're going to regroup and there'll be future E3s. We don't know. Do you think this is really, truly it?
I think we're taking a shift. A lot of the companies are making a lot of budget cuts lately. Digital is the way to go. It's, you know, you don't have to haul a bunch of people inside of an area. You don't have to worry about sickness and all these debacles going back and forth. You can edit on the fly. I mean, technology is so good now. And you can host from home. You don't have to pay for flights.
Yeah.
So I think that's where we're going. And Jeff Keighley, I mean, at Game Awards, man, that's truly our E3 at the end of the day, right? So I think they should just pass the baton. You know, E3 can do some digital stuff, maybe digital hosting and put everything in one place. But I just don't think that in-person E3 is going to be anything it was. I just think that we all just need to move on from it, including E3, and find a way to adapt to the digital age.
I think that's well said. Yeah, I mean, it is a vestige of a different time. There was a time when we needed to assemble all the people that wrote in all the publications to one place and show them things so that they could disseminate that information. You don't need to do that anymore. The information can be disseminated from the source. They can have more control over that message.
Mm-hmm.
It is much cheaper. The idea, I think, that E3, the ESA, was charging folks probably a whole lot of money to be on that show floor. It seems obvious to me that those companies would look at that expense and go, why? What do we get out of that? And as sad as it is for folks like us that have enjoyed those times and had camaraderie with folks that we see in person only in those types of events, to see that contract and lose that opportunity to reconnect with friends and have those experiences is sad, but you kind of can't blame the companies for going, no, why? We don't need this. We have our own messaging. We don't want to be swallowed up in the chaos of all these other companies. We can have these individual moments and carve out our own spotlight. I get it, but it is sad. Christian, you predicted the exact opposite of this.
No. I predicted E3 would be great this year.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes the best E3...
You're going to try and spin this as an accurate prediction.
It's no so great. E3. Sometimes you got to know when to hold them,
uh-huh.
when to fold them. Look, if there can be an entire genre of music, i.e. country, dedicated to the art of knowing when you've been beaten, when you should walk mm-hmm. away, when your truck's destroyed, your dog left you, your girlfriend left you, your boyfriend left you. Sometimes
uh-huh.
this achy, breaky heart knows that it's time just to pack it up, pack it in, and that can be the best thing you can have going for you. You know, the best uh-huh, thing, uh-huh. look, Jeff. I mean,
no one's buying this. No one's buying it, Christian.
Jeff. The best E3 is the $50 t-shirt you buy next year because E3 is just a t-shirt brand. That's the best.
Yeah.
The best. So, I mean, to your point
about
like getting journalists together and stuff like that. This isn't the reckoning, Jeff. We got to wait till January for you to dredge this up again.
Oh, I get to do it twice. I get to double dip. That's the joy. It's early enough in the year that I'm going to get to double dip again in December when we talk about our predictions for the year.
I guess it is E3. So yeah, I think you get triple dips, I think, with this. One on each end, rip it in half, dip again. Not only is it not required necessarily to get journalists and enthusiast press together, it's not required to get product buyers together
right.
in the same way. Where right. like that's kind of the genesis of this was off of things like CES and you're buying right. purchasers together, bringing yeah. purchasers together. And now, for example, the Steam Deck is just sold from Steam directly. PlayStation VR 2 in the US just sold directly. Most video games purchases now are done digitally and so sold directly to the consumer. And so the idea that Walmart needs to sit there and go, we'll take 10,000 Apex Legends, please.
Right.
It just doesn't exist anymore. But the thing that I think that resonated with me the most after this news kind of hit were kind of the op-eds and thoughts about how this was in Nintendo, Sony, Microsoft's best interest. The three of us might like to sit here and say who had the best press conference, what trailer was the best, oh, Tears of the Kingdom looked awesome and Starfield looked a little weak. Like they don't want that. No billion-dollar company wants to be known as the crappy conference, you know, at an E3. In this way, Sony can do a state of play, and we'll talk about it and be like, it was a pretty good one. Ghost of Tsushima 2 looked great. And Nintendo can do one, and we'll be like, Mario Galaxy 2 looked great. And then Microsoft will do one, and we'll be like, oh, look, this new version of Halo looks great. And that's all there is. And there's not this fight, you know, this cage match that happens when you put all the big dogs in the yard together at the same time, take off the leash. So it bums me out big time. I think for many of the reasons Frank brought up of like this dream of being there and experiencing it. I think the stories and camaraderie you get that aren't prepackaged, you know, sitting at the bar at the hotel lobby or after a hands-on demo, having a genuine moment with a, you know, person at a publisher or developer. And I'm going to miss those, but yeah, whoever made that prediction this year was a big dumb.
Yeah. So Frank, tell me maybe something, some of your favorite moments from E3 or, you know, something that you'll remember. You know, I guess it's worth taking a moment and reflecting on what it was and why people like us thought it was special.
Yeah. You know, back in the day, I'll be 40 in November. So back in the day, we didn't have the pleasure of sitting across the table from a celebrity, like A or S ranked celebrity, tier celebrity, that are voicing in a game or acting in a game. Keanu Reeves was, you know, like right there, was talking to him, you know, can touch him, so to speak. You didn't want to touch him. Don't touch him.
he will John either. Wick you. He will, yeah, John
he
Wick
will
you.
Do this, you know. But yeah, having that accessibility to devs and stuff that makes these games that you grew up with, that you loved, and that are continuing to do it, that was something special. You know, we had that linear system to where you could tell the person that made the video game that you loved how much you care for this industry and what they're doing for it. That has devolved into criticism and pointing fingers about why games are bad. A lot of people that don't know anything about making games start to criticize devs, which made it very hard, right? Threats and all that stuff. So I could see the back and forth with E3, but the magical part of it is all that subsides when you're in person. Because a lot of people don't have that computer to sit there and protect them from all the naysays. But at the same time, they can see human to human interactions, because a lot of us kind of lose touch when we're behind the screen. And I think having that is good. Now, in place of that is the fact that this year has been an influx of press and creator, influencer, actor interactions on a personal level. I had that with Capcom and Redfall, and I just got back from Star Wars Jedi Survivor. And that was better than the E3 experience.
Mm.
You know, even though I loved it, I love being able to go into these big auditoriums and seeing Uncle Xbox up there and, you know, and Nintendo and everybody like talking and getting hyped about stuff.
Yeah,
but you're right. There was so much pressure behind those walls, right? You know, of getting playable demos ready or getting non-only cutscene footages with we want gameplay, you know, getting that ready. But now having that digital experience, they can show off what they want over the course of time. So now I'm like, I miss hosting it. I miss hosting it. It was a dream come true, but I've been there and done that. And I understand the situation of it and how much money goes behind having these venues.
The yeah, flying you were expensive.
Was, yes, so expensive. I saw a booth price and I literally was just like, why are you doing this? And they were like, yeah, that's why we're not doing it next year. So,
yeah,
you know, the exhaustion of flying out and going there and doing all this stuff, that stuff I'm happy not to do anymore. But there will be a part of me still crying inside to not be able to be there. It was E3, man. Like, that was the biggest event. But it's not the biggest event anymore.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I mean, the pomp and circumstance was joyous. You know, there was a time when it was the size and scale of it and being there, and you walk into the thing and they've built a replica of the set from inside a video game, and you're sitting there, and then this giant screen comes on with awesome sound and you're seeing this thing for the first time, and you're right there sharing molecules with the developers, and some guy gets up or lady gets up and introduces it for the 400th time that day, and you hear the exhaustion in their voice, but you're still so excited. And you know, it's exhausting. It was always exhausting running from place to place, from hall to hall. You know, invariably you'd have a meeting back to back in two different halls every hour. You know, you're running back and forth.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff that was, you know, that was exhausting and trying and frustrating, but it was all part of it. You know, you had like 3-4 days of just everything all at once, drinking from the fire hose of video games. And you know, we've talked a lot, Christian, about that thing of you go to E3 and you always come back with you know, two or three or half a dozen games that you didn't even know you were excited about before you left. You didn't even know about them. You kind of walked by a thing and you saw, you know, this display for this thing you didn't even know about, and you kind of walked up to it and you got some hands on, and there was those, that kind of discoverability that you had at E3 that was fun. And you know, and the people, it was always special to be around people that you didn't see except for those moments. And you have these relationships and you pick right up where you left off from the last year or whatever. And that's going to be a sad thing to lose. I was trying to remember what my first year of E3 was. It's early 2000 somewhere, 2002, maybe 2003, somewhere around in there. I can't remember what exactly it was, but the first year I went to E3, I finagled my way in. I was working at the Hollywood Bowl in Los Angeles as in the box office, and my manager and myself wrote in and said we're buyers for the Hollywood Bowl gift shop and we needed to go, and we finagled our way. I wasn't involved in the video game industry. I hadn't been doing that in a while, and so we like got in, and it felt like this coup, and we felt like we were kind of being transgressive, but it was amazing to be there, and it was so fun. And then like just a few years later, I was covering video games officially and invited there, and it felt like the destination, you know, as you said, Frank. And covering it in the years when, I can't remember what year it was, but there was a year when it turned into just only appointments, and there was no show floor. And, you know, the, like, you would go to each booth and they'd have different lemon bars, you know, I remember sampling each lemon bar in each different meeting, and, you know, the terrible lunches that we would have, and the, you know, it and the smells of E3 and the crazy floor demonstrations. I was there the year they had that Tony Hawk half pipe and the fire breathers, and just like, man, what a piece of cultural history that E3 was. You know, it's just like
booth babes everywhere.
Oh my Remember God. That? God. Going to a Nintendo unveiling and literally having women with the handheld console that they were unveiling strapped to their bodies. Like they were the security device was a woman. Crazy. Oh, crazy. Anyway, Christian, any memories to add to that pile?
Well, to say it also, I think, speaks to the maturation of video games. You know, people like to talk about like, our games are like, yes, they are. And we've known that for a while, but that kind of argument gets brought up over and over and over again. And I think, unfortunately, to some extent, the death of E3 shows that video games don't need to all get together to be mainstream news anymore. Mm-hmm. That used to need to be like Captain Planet, you know, like Nintendo, Sega, TurboGrafx. With our powers combined, we'll get a tiny column in USA Today, you know? And now it's like GTA 5's like, I've been out since PlayStation 3 and I'm still pulling in all the money. So I don't need you. Avatar, oh, you made a billion? Congrats. Fortnite donated that. made so much. We donated that. I'm exaggerating. I don't think they've donated quite a billion yet, but it's probably gotten close. And so I think part of that, because games are so big and the largest form of entertainment, the idea of an E3 isn't necessary to drum up that. Right. That buzz. I think the thing, and I've talked to you about this a little bit, Jeff, just kind of like in passing, I guess the thing that I'll miss about E3, it's a little odd. I'm going to try to thread the needle. So I'm going to back up a little bit. I think the gatekeeping of E3 was problematic. There were ways to finagle your way in, but it was a gate-kept event. And I think oftentimes with gatekeeping, there are a lot of problems. And you see that across the industry still today. There's gatekeeping, and that's problematic. The other side of that is unrestrained lies, you know, like bought, paid for. There's no governing board over it. Someone on TikTok is giving financial advice that is paid for by the company that does the advice, or like when Twitch was deep in gambling streams, and like there's like too far democratization, right? Like just the Wild West. In E3, while it was a very too much gatekeeping, I thought got better and better and better, but I miss that line of, dare I say, like journalistic integrity to some extent. I don't mean that sarcastically, like the way if you're chronically online, you might refer to it like that. But like, to some extent, the publishers needed to present their wares in a way that they were the ones nervous. Mm-hmm. They were the ones that like, I need to have this right because this is our shot. This is the thing. And currently where we are today, and we are very much a part of this, we're able to do the show because of this, the technology that makes it easier to do. But I feel like we're toward the Wild West a little bit now, where the people making content, it feels to me, are the ones that are nervous at the events because they're like, I need you, dear publisher. Oh, this lemon bar? Way better than 3K's lemon bar. Oh, 3K's lemon bar is garbage. Oh, this lemon bar? Way better than Crapcom's lemon. It's like this weird, it's parasitic in a way. And I don't quite know, because I'm still living through it, I don't quite know the best way to express it. But I think there was something nice about E3 of these companies being put on notice. A little bit. We're like, it did have to work and it couldn't be polished and people were going to ask hard questions. And I don't know if we get as much of that now. And I miss that. Hopefully some of that, Frank and Jeff, made some sense.
No, it definitely made sense. I get it. I mean, E3 for me was console wars, you know, at the time. back then we were just excited to see a new console, period. But now it's like, you know, Nintendo's better than this, and you know, PlayStation's better than that. How many did Nintendo sell? You know, it's that back and forth that I agree with you, Christian. I miss the E3 love, because you pulled down those curtains and you got together and you were like, I got to make sure I make this event, write about it, talk about it. We all had fun, we loved it, and everyone looked forward to E3, and it was the place to be. It was like Comic Con, you know, it was like the place to go. Sad, but you know, a different time.
It is sad. It is sad. And it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out with regard to, you know, I think Microsoft has already said they're going to have the equivalent of their, you know, big conference in that time period. I wonder if those dates will shift now that there isn't this thing. Although, you know, Summer's Games Fest, I guess, is still happening for whatever that is going to be.
Well, so is Jeff Grubbs. I like how he claimed it.
Yeah.
Like, these are all part of my presentation now. He just listed the dates that they're all happening and said they're all his.
Yeah, pretty great.
Well done. Well done.
Anyway, it's a sad day. It's a day that I guess seemed inevitable, unless you're Christian Spicer, and in which case it completely blindsided you.
Jeff, the years of you whiffing on every prediction that we have recorded.
I am going to revel in this so much, Spicestradamus. This is a good one. This is some catnip.
My E3 is still going to be great, Jeff. I'm sorry you're not going to be there to try the ribs, you know?
All right. Moving on. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
I mean, it has to be the exact reason why E3 is dead, and it's us getting 10 minutes of gameplay of Tears of the Kingdom just delivered to us over the internet, because that's how it is now. Like, I know the game comes out before E3.
There's no more stark demonstration of why. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the timing and the release. Yeah. It probably would have had to come out earlier, you know, blah, blah, blah. But like, as Frank mentioned, what a slick, wonderfully edited video they highlighted. So for folks who are coming here for their news, Nintendo released a Nintendo Direct that was focused on Tears of the Kingdom gameplay. Over 10 minutes, or exactly 10 minutes, of like showing you nuanced gameplay, not raw, uncut gameplay, not someone just wandering, playing in that moment live in front of you, but showing you what the meat and potatoes of the game is likely going to be, at least
specific
part of it.
New systems too. Yes. Literally, like, here's some new things in this version of Breath of the Wild that weren't in the previous game. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to merge these stones and these sticks and create the longest fork you've ever seen in your life, which seems silly until you remember the stuff people did in Breath of the Wild, where we didn't give them this system. And then it shows the vehicles and it shows. And so like, yeah, these two things happening in the same week, it is just where we were and where we are. Mm-hmm. And then aside from that part of the story, Tears of the Kingdom has already broken my brain, and run-of-the-mill folk haven't even gotten their hands on it yet. You know, like, holy crap.
It's wild to me that a Legend of Zelda game, I mean, I guess Breath of the Wild is already this, but they're leaning into it so hard that a Legend of Zelda game is a showcase for creativity. Like, that's what they've created, is this sandbox where you are going to just be, I think the developers too will be amazed what people do with this stuff, as you know, we've already amazed by what people did with Breath of the Wild, but it feels like this is going to take it to a whole other level, right, Frank?
Yes, I agree with you. I'm laughing in my head because it feels like I knew you guys forever, because you're hitting on these points that I talk about all the time. I call it the Bethesda effect, where you release a game, you get modders on it, you get people that do incredible stuff, and you use that for inspiration for your next title. Or you just release the title 25 times and make money from it. But Skyrim. But yeah, this Swiss Army Knife Zelda game is incredible. I was like, oh, okay, you can fuse stuff. That's cool. Saw the vehicles and was like, what? You know, I was a little hyped. Now I'm super hyped for it. And I'm just like, and it's not because of what I'm going to be doing with it. So I'm going to be doing the stuff that they show me. But it's what I'm going to see.
15-year-old. My vehicle's going to be like a plank on a wheel.
Like, a log with a spin on it. Yeah. These, I saw a video of a lady with her 9-year-old son who was like creatively bombing himself across the land to kill something. And I'm just like, I cannot wait to see, now that we have, you know, TikTok, if TikTok is around still.
Yeah, right.
We'll see TikToks with kids doing amazing things that I can't even fathom. And I'm here for it. And this is the magic of what you said, having that digital and that live edit right there. Everything was perfect, right? I mean, he was speaking Japanese, obviously. The translator was on point, on par. Didn't have to worry about that. Sound was great. The video looked great. Nobody cared that it was edited.
Right.
See, if that was something else, E3 in person, maybe people would talk about it and be like, why didn't they do live footage? This, people were so, they're dangling that steak in front of your face. And you were eating it up.
Totally. No, great points there. I think it's very ironic that Nintendo has gone from just a few years ago being like, no Nintendo stuff on YouTube. No, we're going to shut it all down, to like, hey, we're making a Zelda game that's literally made for clipping. Like, we're designed around, you make clips of the crazy stuff you do and it'll promote our game in ways we could never do. That's a pretty big shift, and it's interesting to note. But I love your point. I didn't even think of it this way, Frank, I think this is the first Zelda game you can say where they literally were like, what are the people doing in this game? Let's accentuate that. I can't think of another Zelda game where the next iteration, it always feels like iterations of Zelda are like, oh my gosh, I never would have thought the game would go there. Mm-hmm. And now it feels like you're right. It does really feel like they're taking inspiration from the community and going, wow, people really latched on to all of this cool stuff. Let's just give them more ways to do that. And that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
It's awesome.
Christian, did you see stuff in the 10 minutes? I mean, let's talk a little bit specifically about the powers that they showed.
When they merged the game with the $70 price point.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think anybody's blinking at that anymore. So we saw Recall, which lets you kind of go back in time of something that drops, will now go up, and that's kind of a way to get you into those sky islands that are going to be a big part of Tears of the Kingdom. We saw Fuse, which lets you stick any weapon to any other weapon. You know, you can make a stick with a boulder on the end, as you said, a fork with a longer stick attached to it. I'm sure there's going to be billion-y more of those that we can't even see.
I'm
going to
kill Ganon from another continent. You know, I'm going to be ready to be like,
yeah. I love the eyeball on the arrow that lets you make it into a heat-seeking missile. Ultra Hand, which is kind of a weird name for the thing that lets you stick two objects in the world together with what looks like goop. Some putty. Yeah, goop. Yeah, yeah, it's good. Which, you know, is the kind of the key to making those vehicles and things. And then Ascend, which I don't – that one broke – is the one that really broke my brain, because I was like, oh, yeah, no – people are going to cobble together things, make crazy contraptions. That's all awesome. But Ascend is like, if it's got a roof on it, you can go up through that. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What? How do you play test this game? It's like people can go anywhere and do it. He did say there were some restrictions on it, but man, Frank, is there one of those, all of those that got you most excited?
You know, the reason why Breath of the Wild was a little difficult for me to wrap my mind around, because Ocarina of Time is one of my favorite games of all time. You know, I remember saying, "Mom, Dad, they're shadows." You know, I remember saying that in that game. Yeah. But now, yeah, the durability was one thing I hated.
Me too.
The stamina system, I hate it. But now they took it and they say, you know what? Durability is still there, but the fact that you can fuse anything together fixes that problem. It's not like I'm have a master sword, the thing that I knew from legend that shouldn't break after four hits breaks. Right. But the ascend thing was, yeah, that was mind blowing to me because I was just like, if it's a cave and it has a ceiling, I can go through it. No stamina issues. Wow. Yeah. I'll play it, you know? So, totally. Yeah, that was good.
I agree 100% on that. And they specifically called that out. It was specifically like, hey, you can climb the outside of a mountain or, and it's like, oh, wow, you really did do that for this purpose. And you're right. I think it's addressing those pain points in a way that you would never expect. It's not like, oh, we're taking away the stamina thing or we're more generous with the stamina thing. We just came up with this completely novel way to give you another option, which is, wow, what a cool design idea. I'm just very impressed with that. You know, I bounced off of Breath of the Wild, and I know so many people think it's the greatest video game of all time, and I respect that opinion. A lot of the reasons you mentioned, Frank, the durability stuff, that stamina stuff, the sort of lack of focus of the game, it didn't click with me in the way I wish it had, the way it has for so many others. But man, I'm very much interested to see if these tweaks and these new powers and these new abilities solve those problems for me. And so I didn't think I was going to be this excited for Tears of the Kingdom, but here I am. Here I am, excited.
I'm excited to see how Nintendo uses these things. Because I do think a big part of the game is giving these tools to the community and seeing all the... I mean, people are still doing new things with Breath of the Wild today. You know, there are still new videos, people creating new... if you call them vehicles in Breath of the Wild, new contraptions to do things in game that are new today. And so I feel like Tears of the Kingdom is going to have exponentially more of those, but I'm curious how good the game feels for this dum-dum. You know, like, are those challenges going to be rewarding enough and will I figure them out, or will it be so sandboxy and so kind of blown open that I think I might, as I famously never left my home planet in No Man's Sky, will I never leave my starting village? Because I'll just be like, I'm through the roof. I built a roof. Now I'm through that roof. Now I put a roof on that roof, which means I can go through that roof. And it's like I never do anything because it's infinite possibilities of infinite playscapes. I'm very, you know that they have to have stuff in mind where it's like, yeah, you can just ascend. Except this mountain doesn't have a cave, so you still need to use the stamina. But then when you're about to get out of stamina, you see a ledge, and then in the ledge is a cave, and then you go through the thing. And like
the way they will gatekeep areas, the way they will set, you know, I can already imagine the different sky islands and how what it's going to take to get to one. Like, you'll probably be on one, and it looks super close, and it looks like I can hang glide to it, but I can't. I got to do a thing. All of that ingenuity, I think, is going to be wild to see. And there's so much we don't know about the game still. Like, we don't fundamentally know what the story is about. We don't know if there's temples or, you know, there's so many Zelda-y things that they haven't talked about at all. So, you know, and it's coming. It's coming soon. He said they're done. He said they're done with development. So that's pretty exciting. It doesn't sound like we're going to get another delay.
I hope. Okay, yeah, so yeah. I'll say this.
Never say never, I guess.
Zelda has been shown so many times, but we didn't see her in that playthrough. Is it multiplayer? Will we be able to have it? That's the big, you know, Nintendo always slaps us really, really hard when a game releases, where they keep it close to the neck. It's no leaks, no nothing. It's like the agents of whatever is around to snipe anybody out that says anything. I wonder if we're going to get hit with that. Hey, whether you beat the game and you unlock Zelda or you play as Zelda, you know, you go back and forth. That's probably more the case right there. And amiibos, of course, for, you know, Christian that can't figure out how to build the things, they'll have an amiibo for you because, you know, that's something they do.
Yeah.
I have thousands of those. So,
yeah. The thing that will make me angry is if this comes out and then in the fall we hear about the next version of the Switch. I'm going to be mad. I'll be like, come on. Come on. You know?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, those are obviously the hugest stories of the week. The massive, massive stories. I'll just mention quickly a pet
favorite story of mine. We got another DLC announced for Vampire Survivors, which was my personal game of the year last year. April 13th, we'll see the release of Tides of Foscari, I believe it's called Foscari, which is going to have, you know, story content. It's set in a big forest called Foscari Academy. There'll be a school. There's 13 new weapons, 8 new playable characters, 21 new achievements, 7 new music tracks. Unfortunately, it's going to be half the price of the original game.
The gall.
Some
people. I can't.
Which, of course, is $2, ladies and gentlemen. $2! Wow. Vampire Survivor, you know, launched at $5 or $4, I think it was. And $2, it sounds awesome. This game just continues to be the bee's knees to me. I love Vampire Survivors. I love that there's going to be another DLC. I love that they're continually coming up with new characters and new ways to interact with this thing, and adding like a story layer, which is pretty cool for a game that's basically, you know, as bare bones as a game gets in a lot of ways. But Frank, were you a Vampire Survivors fan?
You know, it's those games, that Loop Hero, that literally took me away for like 15 hours. Didn't know I was playing that long.
Yeah.
And kudos to them, because I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, they won Game of the Year from BAFTA.
Yes, I saw that. So, that was just last week as well. Yeah.
Congrats on that.
Very cool.
They released on mobile, so I couldn't get away from it.
Yeah.
You know, if it wasn't for Marble Snap, thank you. Bathroom time would be spent with Vampire Survivor. But yeah, that game is incredible. It just takes you back to, you know, it gives you that nostalgia, but also now you realize where games are. Like, it doesn't take much. It just takes the love of making video games to really give us some unique ideas. And you think about it, it seems simple. You know, you go around, collect weapons, and it shoots everywhere. But it's very entertaining. The entertainment value of, you know, viewers watching it, they love it.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, I can't wait to see how your computer lags. You know, it's just like
the joy of all of the billion things exploding all around you. There's very few games that give me such visceral joy of just seeing them explode into numbers all around me. That's a great feeling. Christian, $2 for the DLC.
I cannot believe they're charging half the price of the game just for a few new levels, Jeff. I'm curious, and maybe this will do it, because we are living in the world of, you know, Vampire Survivor likes. I'm curious if we'll get Vampire Survivor 2, or if they will do a DLC that kind of incorporates some of these other mechanics these other games are already doing. Not that, you know, Vampire Survivors, as Frank mentioned, just won, you know, the BAFTA, so it's not past having its moment yet, but I think the beauty of the game itself is that it could be so easily adapted and changed within that core gameplay that they've created, where, you know, 5 years from now, is it having its Fortnite moment again? You know, where the game is so malleable in so many ways.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Tons of news, but we got games to talk about as well. So let's get right into it. But first, I got to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace! Oh, Squarespace has supporting our show since its inception, those 9 years ago. And I am so pleased to be able to tell you about Squarespace. I use it. I recommend it to friends and family as well. JeffCanada.com was built on Squarespace. And I still think it is the best place to build a website. It is also the all-in-one platform for building your brand and growing your business online. You can stand out with a beautiful website. That's always been the case with Squarespace. But now they have new tools that let you engage with your audience, sell anything, your products, the content you create, even your time. Let me explain. They have these member areas that make it easy for creators to monetize their content, but also their expertise in a way that fits their brand. You can unlock these new revenue streams for yourself with those member areas and for your business. Freeze up time in your schedule by selling access to gated content like videos, online courses, or newsletters. And if you want to sell videos, you want to create videos, there's the Squarespace Video Studio app that lets you do that very simply, very easily. It's all part of their suite of tools, which are sweet. The video app lets you share videos, tell your story, grow your audience, drive sales. And if you're selling stuff, their online store is so easy. It's just a few clicks to turn your website into an online store. You can sell physical products. You can sell digital products. They've got the tools you need to start selling online immediately and easily. Plus, analytics help you grow your business, insight into where your customers are coming from, where your site visits and sales are coming from. You can analyze the channels that are most effective, improve your website, build marketing strategies based on your top keywords, your most popular products. It's got everything you need. So check it out. Don't take my word for it. Check it out. Squarespace.com/Jeff sent me is where you go. You'll get a free trial, which is completely free. They won't even take a credit card from you to start. You can just build your website for free at squarespace.com/Jeff sent me. And then when you're ready to launch, use our offer code, which is also Jeff sent me, J-E-F-F-S-E-N-T-M-E, all one word. You'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. Squarespace, also a great place to buy domains. They have an awesome front end. I've used it many times. Squarespace.com/Jeff sent me and the promo code Jeff sent me. It is time to talk about the games that we have been playing. Frank, hey, yes. First thing I want to ask you, this isn't written on your playlist on our show notes, but you mentioned that you went to the Star Wars Jedi Survivor event. Are you able to talk about that?
I'm able to talk about it tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow's the embargo. So, but I can tell you this. It's awesome. Granted, I am a big Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
Which doesn't mean that I'm going to sit there and, you know, suck the toes of the Star Wars universe. But it means I'm very critical about the Star Wars universe. And I can't wait to be able to talk about it.
Fantastic. Great to hear. I really liked that first game. And I think it was really just a hint of what was possible with that franchise. And it really feels like this is going to be the Assassin's Creed 2 of the Assassin's Creed franchise. You know,
I'm holding my mouth, if you guys can't tell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked the first one.
All right, so what is on your playlist that you can talk about?
Yes, Wild Hearts, a game that came in. So a game that I wasn't hyped about at all. EA's the publisher, and Omega Force is the creator. And Omega Force is known for making the kaiju genre. I'll just call it that for now, because if I say monster hunting genre, people are automatically going to associate it with the games, you know, even though it is a genre. Yes, a monster hunter just got the name, and it was great for them to get the name. Very huge in Japan, one of my homes I lived and loved. But Wild Hearts puts a different spin. It is not the Monster Hunter clone everyone thinks it is. Got some heat in the beginning because of some performance issues on certain cards and certain computers. I did not have any problems. There was like a small slowdown issue dealing with one of the items that you build, and it shoots out like a wave of energy to heal you, and it's really bright, and it would slow down the game, and they fixed that. They like fixed it without even a patch from us. So it was really crazy. But I have over 250 hours of that game.
Woo.
And yes, I love every bit of it. You build this thing called Katakuri, which is building blocks, and you take crates and different objects. So they have the basic Katakuri, and then you fuse them together to make walls and all kinds of stuff. Some people would joke around and call it the Fortnite of Monster Hunter. The only similarity between Monster Hunter and Wild Hearts is the fact that you hunt monsters and you get stuff to put gear on. Essentially, that's where it stops. It is a completely different game. It's probably it's more attractive because it has the combat scheme of like Ghost of Tsushima. It's your classic square, light, triangle, heavy. You know, X is jump, if you're using a PlayStation controller, that is, and circle dodge. You relate that to any controller you want. Keyboard friendly, great game. Drop in, drop out, multiplayer, super fast. There's no loading issues. Jeff, if you want to jump in with me, you can. You know, you find a gate, you see what I'm fighting, you jump in, you go in there, you kill the boss, and you leave. And there's no holding you hostage. Anyway, I can go on forever about it. Shut me up.
I don't want to. I want to hear more about it. So I am one of those people that saw this game and assumed it was a Monster Hunter clone.
Yes. It's very easy to do.
Yeah. And you know, and for a lot of people, that's not a bad thing. For me, I played some Monster Hunters. It never super clicked for me because it felt so technical. And I've never been a guy that loves that sort of learning how the giant axe that goes super slow. I don't have the patience for that, unfortunately. So I've had some fun with some Monster Hunters, but it's never been the series that really hooked me. Does it differentiate itself in that way? You talked about it being the combat being a little bit more Tsushima type. Yeah.
So the first thing you do in, let's say, Monster Hunter World, since that was like one of the most popular ones, and we have Rise that came out and they try to adjust this issue with Rise. The first thing everyone does, especially new people to the Monster Hunter series, because when you talk to someone that's a Monster Hunter fan, boy or girl, they're going to be like, it's awesome. Jump in. You're going to love it. And you're like, yay. You're going to spend an untold amount of dollars to get all the DLCs and everything, the expansions. You're going to jump in. You're going to hit square. You know, you're going to hit, you know, your left click, and you're not going to swing your sword or your axe or whatever. And that's going to frustrate you because now you're using trigger keys. You're like, okay, this is some Dark Souls stuff I'm doing, you know, whatever. And then there's all these combinations and stuff that goes along with it. And by the time you understand how gear works, you're putting the game down. I'm like, I'm not doing this. I don't have to combine two fabrics to wear a shirt in the morning. I'm not doing it, right? But on this Wild Hearts, it's go in, smash some buttons, you do damage, you see numbers, and you're happy. And they took a very big inspiration from Mononoke Hime or Princess Mononoke, if you watch anime, a Miyazaki film, and it's there. And you're like, oh my goodness, the monsters are huge, they look scary, but I did some damage. And that's how they suck you in. And there is some complexity, yes, but they introduce it to you kind of like how birds feed their young. Little by little.
That's what I know? Need. Just chew it for me and drop it into my mouth.
Exactly. Just you know, just put it in there and I'll regurgitate whatever I am to the next person. You know? That's pretty much how it works. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Your characters, the character creators, gorgeous. You know, everything about the game just screams. They listened to what Monster Hunter fans wanted, and instead of giving it to them with a, you know, a price tag per game, they gave it to them all in one. And they're making content every 2 weeks. They're dropping new content for free. $70 price tag? Okay. They give you multiple options. EA Play, EA Play Pro, you know, whatever. You can even demo the game for 10 hours. Check it out. See how you like it. You know, and then you might put in 250 hours. But yeah, it's easy to teach you. I did like a 25-minute video. I thought it was less than that. Explaining to, because I would have people come into my chat and be like, hey, is this Monster Hunter Club? I'm like, oh, here we go. So let me go ahead and record this. And I showed them the combat and I showed them all the stuff you can do. And that's where it ended. People stopped my video and they played the game and they're like, we love this game.
Wow. Wild Hearts. I mean, I feel like I've been completely dismissing this game and I shouldn't. Very, very cool. Man, that's awesome. Wild Hearts. It's been out for, what, just a few weeks? You put in 250 hours pretty fast, yeah, right? It's not been out that long.
Yeah, about a month. And it's crossplay too, so you can play with anybody.
Fantastic. What else is on your playlist?
Dredge. So Dredge is a indie game. It's an indie game by an indie developer. It was published by Team 17, which is known for, like, my time in Portia, my time in Samurai, my time everywhere, you know? And they did Dredge, which is a... psychological horror fishing game. I know that's really weird, but you know, work with me. You start off as this guy who's just owns a boat and wants to fish, you know, just wants to find a new beginning, and you end up on this small little island area where they built a town and your boat's wrecked and they pull you up in there and the mayor's like, haha, I see you're here and you're doing well, here's a boat, and by the way, you could pay off that by feeding my people. You know, and you go around, and you're like, oh, this is cozy. I'm digging a fish. And then nightfall comes and there's fog and there's scary stuff happening and you're losing your sanity and all that stuff. You will lose hours in this game. I think it's on sale right now. It's like $24.99. I think regular price is $30. But man, what a game. It's doing very well on Steam. And you know, 90% of games get review bombed in the beginning. This one did not. And it still holds this overwhelming positive. It's great. You should definitely check it out. Even if you don't think you'll like it, check it out for, you know, a couple hours and see how you like it. Because, you know, if you don't like it, Steam allows you to, you know, return the game and then do your thing. But
yeah,
it's really great.
Cool. The fishing in it. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you doing a lot of actual fishing in the game?
Yes, it's interactive. So there's pockets of fish in different areas and different fish depending on where you would get them, whether they're shallow water, coastal, volcanic, don't ask, I don't know, mangrove, you know, these weird areas. And you pull these fish and you have this inventory system. It kind of reminds me of Diablo back in the day where you play Tetris, you know, you have to
hit
the fish. And the fish are bent a certain way and you have to fit them depending on their fins and stuff with your components of your ship that you're upgrading, like your hooks. You know, different hooks for different, you know, coastal or shallow or whatever. And you eventually upgrade your boat to have a bigger hull and you name it. I've learned so much about boats, by the way. not a boater. But yeah, it's pretty incredible. And fishing is interactive. And depending on what you're doing, if you're dredging, hence the name, getting treasures out of the deep, you have a dredge. And you, there's a mini game associated with that that's different than the fishing mini game. You have a chance to get these diabolical fish that have been infected. There's this mystery and lore behind it that you have to find out. Murder and stuff, all kinds of weird stuff in there. It's really fun.
Cool. This is just got on my radar. Might have to check this out. Just came out March 30th. Dredge is the name of it. And as Frank mentioned, $25 on Steam right now.
I kept hovering over it as I was traveling for a Steam Deck game. And we've talked about, Jeff, on this show, like kind of how indie games are merging this and that to make the new game.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of a comfy game not being just a cozy, comfy game. Like the idea, and we kind of had
relaxing
that already
fishing game that comes hard at you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like Cult of the Lamb in some ways, where it's Animal Crossing and you're in a cult. But I think Dredge is really interesting with what I've read and seen from what it does with the genre as well, where it's like, oh yeah, this is cute. This is fun. Oh God, no.
It seems like my jam.
It's fun to see more of that.
I think I might have to pick this up. This looks really cool. Again, that's called Dredge, and it is on Frank's playlist. Christian Spicer, I know that you have been traveling a lot, but anything on your playlist?
Yeah, so I was provided a code for The Last of Us Part 1 on PC. If you listen to this show, or dare I say, the official The Last of Us podcast, you know I love The Last of Us. Last of Us Part 1, up there with one of my very favorite games of all time. Specifically, The Last of Us Part 1, not the first Last of Us, The Last of Us Part 1. The PS5, like that most recent release, is an exquisite release of one of my very favorite games of all time. Don't buy this version yet.
Oof. Now, I've heard they've been patching it, hot fixing it, like three or four times in the last 2 days.
Yes, so it is better now than it was when it launched. So it's hard, like when you're listening, we're recording to this Sunday night, you know, by the time you're listening to this, maybe buy it. Like they clearly are not giving up on this game. This is a game that means a lot to Sony and Naughty Dog, and the HBO franchise is huge, right? Like this is a huge property and I trust that it will be perfected. I'm playing on a 4080 and it can muscle its way through most anything. Like I haven't had as severe problems in my 3 hours with the game on my desktop as others have. I have had some crashes. I've had some, I don't know if I'll call them hangs or stutters, or maybe I waited for the shader compilation and all that stuff to happen, but I've had some NPCs not perform the way they should, I guess is the way I'd phrase it.
I've seen some funny GIFs is what I'm saying. I've seen some JPEGs that are floating around of weird textures and hair and things looking real funky.
The hard part. The best advice I can give right now is don't buy this game on PC yet, but please keep track of it because it's an incredible game. And especially if you don't have a PlayStation, you haven't played it before, please play this game. It's incredible. Even if you watch the HBO show, please play this game, but wait for it to be completely fixed. And then I trust that it will become the definitive version, this PC version. It's not yet. What makes it extra hard for me right now is last week I was talking about my time with RE4 Remake, and I played most of that game on my Steam Deck. And yes, was I playing in medium and averaging 45 frames per second and all that stuff? Yes, but also I was playing RE4 Remake on my Steam Deck and it was pretty dang good. And then on my desktop, it's, oh my God, amazing. And I didn't get, I think it would have loaded, but I got just like, well, I'm not going to play this on my Steam Deck with Last of Us Part 1. So it's just frustrating to have to know what current gen AAA games can look like on PC and, you know, what a Steam Deck version of it can be like, and see the state of Last of Us Part 1 right now. Also, I think frustrating for me because the Uncharted Legacy Collection is awesome on PC.
And yeah, it's kind of baffling,
great
isn't it?
On Steam Deck.
It's really good.
They've been putting out all these games, and it's the first time that they've had this kind of problem. It's very, very surprising to me.
Yeah, and so there is an excellent, as always, Digital Foundry video. They also did not label it a review because, as you mentioned, Jeff, the fixes and hot patches and things are coming in quickly. But they did an excellent breakdown of some of the issues, and it's like over an hour video, and what the game looks like on Medium, and it does not look good on Medium. And it's a shame because I think the game itself is fantastic, and certainly it is still a pop cultural icon, you know, of this moment. And so I'm bummed that it came out in this state, but keep an eye on it. I trust that they will turn it around. But as you are listening to this, as you know, like if you're listening to it soon after we recorded or after the episode drops here on Monday, I would wait a bit and let this PC version of The Last of Us Part 1 continue to cook, unfortunately.
Is this the first version of The Last of Us that's been available on PC? I don't even know.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
This is the first time the franchise has come to PC. And I would say this is probably, in my opinion, the first launch day, launch week miss PC port
from by Sony.
Especially
Sony first
especially
party, yeah.
Recently.
Mm-hmm. They've been all great. Mm-hmm. Spider-Man's been spectacular.
Yeah.
Not to make a pun, but yeah.
I mean, I got Returnal running on. I got through the first biome of Returnal on my Steam Deck. Not that
God
the Steam Deck
great.
Needs to be able to play all these games, but it also was great on PC. And
God of War, Sackboy, Horizon.
Yeah,
you know, all Uncharted. The Uncharted games, yeah. You know, it's all, they've all been fantastic on PC. It's very surprising that they had a misfire like this.
So, I trust it'll get there, but wait a bit.
Yeah.
My
thank you for telling me that, because, I got something to do with that, and I'm going to wait until Tuesday. So, thank you.
Yeah. Everything I've been playing this week, almost everything I've been playing this week, has been VR. So we're going to hop into the VR segment right now. Virtual reality. VR. Virtual reality. Just VR. All right. So the first thing I want to talk about, I got lots of VR stuff I've been messing with, and we'll see how many of them we can get to. But the first thing I want to talk about is my Vive XR Elite headset. Where did I put it? Oh, it's out of arm's reach. Arrived. My Vive XR Elite headset arrived. This was a impulse buy that is a lot more expensive than an impulse buy should be. But I got really excited about when the Vive XR Elite headset was announced. As you know, if you listen to the show, I love VR and I kind of collect these headsets in a dumb way. And so I bought it right when it came available, and it got to my house this last week, and I have been playing with it. Now, I will say right at the top, I have filled out my return slip to return it.
Mm.
That is not to say
it's not an arm's length. It's packed up in a box. Tape wrapped.
It's in shipping length. That's what it is.
I have put many hours on, well, not many hours, you know, a handful of hours on it. Enough to know.
If you're listening to this return, I barely touched it.
Now, they give you a 14-day window, so, you know, I'm good. We'll see if they can actually give me my money back. I spent over $1,000 on this thing. And in a lot of ways, it's very impressive. Certainly from a comfort perspective, it is remarkable what they've managed to achieve. It is very light, very, very light, and really well designed from a comfort perspective. One of the things that always annoys me, I mean, this is my vanity talking, I suppose, but one of the things that annoys me about VR headsets is often the strap that goes over the top of your head and invariably like messes your hair up, and you look like a goof when you take the headset off and you got this weird like part in the middle of your head for the rest of the day because you had a big strap over it. It's a minor annoyance, but it's an annoyance. You're not going to have that with the Vive XR Elite headset. It is literally goggles. And I mean, they look like goggles and they kind of feel like goggles. You put them on. There is no over the top of your head element to it at all. There is a battery pack in the back that counterbalances it beautifully.
So it's a Quest.
Like, well, the Quest has a top thingy.
But I meant like it's an all-in-one, like no wires.
Well, yes, you can attach it to a PC with a single USB-C cable. And then they have a Vive port software solution that lets you stream either over your Wi-Fi network, if you're on the same Wi-Fi network as your PC, or via USB-C. You can stream PC VR content. So it'll stream any Steam game that you have in VR seamlessly. It's actually beautiful how well it works. It just, you know, scrapes your computer for anything you have and populates its little front end. So you put on the headset and it's like, here's the games you have installed on your PC VR. Very slick, very well done. I don't have any complaints about that. Like, it works really, really well. And it worked perfectly fine over Wi-Fi as well. And it's like built in. It's like ready to go right out of the box. You don't need any extra add-on to do that. It's ready to rock. I did it with the cord. The cord is unobtrusive. It kind of sticks in the top back onto the battery pack. But it also gives you the option of removing the battery pack and wearing the goggles almost like sunglasses, where there's no back to it at all. It just has the prongs that you would have on regular glasses that like go over your ears. I didn't like that because it kept falling. It doesn't have the counterbalance, right? The weight of the counterbalance there. And there's also nothing connecting it around the back. It comes with a strap you could add on, but like wearing it like glasses, it didn't work for me. It kind of just kept falling forward. And I was like, well, I'm always going to wear this with the battery anyway, because it's just more comfortable. It doesn't add a ton of weight. And the weight it does add counterbalances the front. So it just works better that way. So anyway, even when I was streaming it, I still had the battery pack on and I was just plugging directly into the battery pack, which is cool. And it really, the other huge crazy thing they did with it, I'm a person that wears glasses all the time. I've had eye surgeries. Now I have to wear glasses all the time. And so that's always a hassle with VR headsets because you have to wear your glasses in the headset. It's never great. It's awkward. For the PlayStation VR 2 headset, I ordered third-party lenses that are my prescription that I slid in that are always on it. So I don't have to – I can just take my glasses off and put the headset on and it works great, which I love. But for the Vive Elite XR headset, they have diopters built in that you set, and part of the initial calibration software that you, wow, the first time you put it on, it's like, dial in your prescription. Until it's clear, dial it in. Now, the downside is if you have over a plus or minus 6 prescription, and people who wear glasses usually know their prescription. So 6 is a very intense corrective lens, but people have definitely more than 6. Luckily, I don't. The highest prescription I have in one of my eyes is a 5. So I fit in their window. But if you don't, there is no way to wear glasses inside the Vive XR Elite headset. There's no way to do it. They're literally like goggles that fit really close to your face. There's no room for glasses. So fortunately for me, my prescription falls in that range. And because of that, I was able to dial in those diopters. And it's pretty rad. It's like having those lenses that I got for the PSVR 2 that I spent $80 for from a third party to get my prescription, but it works for multiple people's prescriptions. So I think that's a pretty bold feature to have. And I think for me, I very much appreciated it. I thought that was very cool and it works. It works. The downside and the reason I'm returning it is unique to me in that I have a Valve Index. I thought this new Vive was going to put that to shame in the same way the PlayStation VR 2 puts it to shame. PlayStation VR 2 is a clearer, crisper denser, just higher fidelity VR experience, even to the very expensive Valve Index that I got years ago. The screens are better. The field of view is better. It's better. It's not miles better, but it's better. And I thought I was going to have that upgrade, coupled with the fact that it doesn't require external tracking cameras like the Index still does. So I still have tracking cameras up in this room that I'm in right now for when I put on my Index. And I was very excited to take those down and just not have them cluttering up my office. And yes, the internal, the inside out tracking of the Vive XR Elite headset works great. It tracks your fingers. You can use your hands, and you don't even need, it comes with controllers, but you can do hand tracking like the Quest does. It's all great, and I would be able to take down those cameras, but for $1,000, I was hoping the visuals would be better, and they aren't. They aren't. It's not an upgrade at all to my view. I mean, I was going back and forth between my Index and the Vive to compare one-to-one with the same software, and I couldn't discern any significant difference. When I put on a PSVR 2 and I have the same software on my PC in my Index, I feel like it's a night and day difference. And that's what I was like, I'm ready to upgrade. I'm going to spend the money, even though I shouldn't. I'm going to spend the money to get that PC VR experience that is equivalent to the PSVR 2. No, it's not. I'm sad to say it is not. So that is why, for me in particular, it's going back. But if you don't have a PC VR headset and you want one and you've got the scratch, the thing that's hard for me is, like, at that very high end price point, it's nobody's first VR headset. You know, it's like, It doesn't make any sense. It's not so night and day above the Quest 2. It's not, I mean, it's like very equivalent to the Quest 2, especially when it's not tethered. When you're not streaming from your PC, it's very equivalent, but you don't have all of the Meta Quest exclusive VR content. You have a bunch of Vive exclusive VR content, which is not great. Not great. There's a few things that were kind of interesting, but compared to, like, you know, the stuff that is exclusive to the Meta Quest, which is, you know, some of the coolest VR stuff I've played, like Lone Echo, it's hard to say, well, yeah, this Maestro game where you play as a conductor, or, you know, it's a bunch of like $12 and $15 Vive port stuff, but they're all not particularly compelling for me as somebody who's very much a connoisseur of VR stuff. So a mixed bag in that. I think a lot of positives if this is your first PC VR headset and you're really jazzed about it, but like it's $1,000 plus. Like, it's hard to say, hey, make this your first VR headset when you can get a Meta Quest 2 for half of that, less than half of that. So anyway, I part of me is relieved because it's like, well, I shouldn't have spent that much money anyway, but you know, I was rude. I wanted it to be this huge upgrade for me, and I got to keep these tracking things up. All right. I have other VR things I want to talk about, but Christian, let me hear what you've been playing on your PSVR 2.
I was given a code for the update to Walking Dead Saints and Sinners, the PSVR 2 version of that. And as you were saying, Jeff, the upgrade from Walking Dead Saints and Sinners on PSVR 1, I think I also played it on my Quest 1. I forget where I originally played it. I think both.
It's on Quest for sure, yeah.
If someone wants to search through our episode, old episodes, I'm sure I raved about it before, because it is a VR-designed game. And it is a game that utilizes the strengths of that tactile experience of being in VR, of loading your gun, taking things out, pulling out your clipboard, flipping your pages through things, marking things off that you've done, and the pacing of a VR game. I thought it was expertly crafted then in terms of how it, you know, created enemy encounters that felt good in VR and wasn't trying to replicate something from a 2D screen into a VR space. The PSVR 2 version is night and day better than those other versions I've played. I mean, just from the get-go, like the first one, Saints and Sinners 1, you're sitting down at a campfire and, oh, you're the tourist. And let's tell you a story of when you were in New Orleans. And like just that image is startling how much better it is. The lighting, the atmosphere, everything about it is just like, oh, this is going to be an incredible upgrade. And sure enough, as the game unfolds and I take my clipboard out or my map, I can read it. You know, like the fidelity, the difference of like squinting and kind of being like, go to market. Oh, market. Got it. Where's market? And like looking around for the in-world signage and stuff like that. And having tracking that works great, as my PSVR 2's tracking has been incredible. The controllers are incredible. And I think that this is remains a home run of a game and is now, in my opinion, the definitive way that I've certainly played it. And I think what makes Walking Dead Saints and Sinners so great on PSVR 2 is that it was designed as a VR game. RE7, we talked about how incredible that is in VR. RE8, also pretty dang incredible in VR. Maybe it's just because I played the flat screen version of it first. I felt like and I know there's options for some of this, turning some of this off, but I feel like the VRification of some of the items in RE8 didn't add to the gameplay, the reloading, the looking around in first person. I kind of got used to the 2D version of that game. Saints and Sinners exists only as a VR game, and I think because of that, its combat feels stronger. The way that it tells its story and the way it uses the physical nature of VR feels more purposeful. And I really, really, really enjoyed it. I think it's a great game. And I think if people haven't played it because they were maybe worried about it not controlling well or hearing that it didn't before, PSVR 2 version, I've had zero problems so far. And I think it's an absolute home run. Another great game for your VR horror.
Yeah. I'll chime in with another game in a sort of a similar vein, and that is a game called After the Fall. This is from the same folks that did the very, very cool, very early VR breakout hit, Arizona Sunshine. This is After the Fall is basically Left 4 Dead, Back 4 Blood, whatever you want to say, in VR. Now, if you've played Left 4 Dead, Back 4 Blood, does it bring a lot of new stuff to the table? No. Is playing one of those games in VR really cool? Yeah. Yes, it is. I mean, it does the same thing. It's a co-op experience. Here, zombies are cold. The thing, I don't know, that's where they're stepping out and being unique is the cold zombies, is ice zombies. Whatever happened, there's like a, you know, whatever. Snow everywhere, ice zombies, but you're still shooting zombies and you're still trying to get from one safe area to the next safe area. You're going through, you're shooting lots of zombies. It's cool VR style. You know, you can reload in cool VR. It's not doing anything anybody else isn't doing, but it's fun to do that stuff. And it's got some really cool interfacey stuff where they use this aesthetic of old arcade cabinets as like the way that the, you know, the underground resistance is, you know, transporting information. So you can find floppy disks and you put them in an old arcade cabinet and it unlocks new items and stuff. That's kind of cool. It's kind of cool. A little flourish, but ultimately it's the game that you expect it to be. And that game is pretty fun. And in VR, it's really fun because you get to these big, huge, you know, you've been working your way through and okay, all you got to do is stand on this spot for 2 minutes and it's throwing all the zombies at you from every direction and you're spinning around, you're shooting. It's good fun. It's good fun. After the Fall on PlayStation VR 2. Christian,
you're good. Yeah, go. The other one, The other one that I will talk about is C-Smash VRS, which now the demo is out for everybody to play for free. I also went out first to patrons, but also went out now on our main feed. I had a interview with Corey Schmitz and Jörg Tittle, two folks behind C-Smash VRS, and it is an update to the Dreamcast legend, never really came west, Cosmic Smash. And you can think of it as Breakout, Breakout meets Squash, or, you know, Breakout meets Racquetball. I love the vibes of this game. I love what it's putting out. I love what it's putting down. The demo now is free for everybody to play. So I think if you have PSVR 2, you should try the demo. I think it really highlights the PSVR 2's OLED screens, like the blackness and white. It's like the stark Michael Jackson Scream, you know, video aesthetic, and then the blackness of space behind there as you're in this space station playing the game.
If you're alive in 1997.
Yes, and or if you've listened to the bonus interview with Jörg and Corey, yeah. we talk about Scream.
Yeah.
Which, if you are listening to this with your children in the car and you want to listen to Scream, they say a bad word in that song, one of the rare Michael Jackson songs that will curse at you in the middle of it. I think it's Janet who actually does the cursing. The demo just has a tutorial, just 10 stage or whatever it is tutorial, very basic, kind of teaching you the mechanic of the breaking out, this, that, and the other. Super fun to play. And then it also has a multiplayer mode, which I was like, I'll dive into some multiplayer. I'll see what this is like. And then I remembered I don't subscribe to PlayStation Plus anymore, nor did I for the demo. I have heard that some folks had connection issues with the demo, or like if you were the host, it was just like game on, you know, you're mopping the floor, you know, living your best life. And if you're not, it was less than ideal. I cannot speak to the multiplayer. I don't know how the full game will play out, but I found the demo to be both relaxing in a way of like, you're just kind of in this vibe and in this space, and also fun creativity with getting your shots. There are walls that block your shot that you have to like bounce up and over. I also moved my PlayStation 5 and PSVR 2 into my main living room so that I could play room scale, like actually, you know, not run, but move my body left or right. There's a way where you can play seated and use the thumbstick to move your in-world character. But I took the time to move my setup into a bigger space, and I loved it. It is definitely a game that's made for me, right? Like an old Dreamcast kid, bringing this franchise forward and putting it in PSVR 2 with the OLED screen. It's the C-Smash VRS demo, and the full game comes out in June. So you can look for that.
I have one more thing I want to talk about, and this one I'm really excited about. This is where I spent most of my time this week. It's a brand new release called The Last Worker, and this is a game that's also available, I believe, on a variety of systems as a flat screen 2D game experience.
And but made by the same folks behind C-Smash VRS.
Mm-hmm. But it also supports PlayStation VR 2. The PS5 version of the game just automatically supports PSVR 2. So that's the only way I have played this. And ladies and gentlemen, this is the only way I'd recommend playing this. I mean, I haven't played it normal. It's probably pretty fun as a normal 2D game. But I have a hard time imagining anybody would have nearly as much fun as I'm having. So the idea of The Last Worker is a very interesting, sort of ambitious take on it. It's a game that really has something to say, and that is that end-stage capitalism is pretty bad. You play in some far future, you play the last worker, the titular last worker, at a Amazon warehouse-esque location where there's things that need to be shipped. They need to be picked up from one cubby hole and placed into various receptacles to get to the end user. But because it's the future, it's this vast, endless, three-dimensional rows of packages. So you have, you are this worker who's literally sitting in this cool, floating anti-gravity chair, and you can go on the Z-axis as well. So you're going, you know, moving through this facility, but going up and down these, you know, infinitely tall stacks of cubby holes where there are packages. And so you'll have, you know, you'll have a package you need to get. You go and you have a Half-Life 2-esque gravity gun that's on your chair. And you're, the whole game is very cool. I've been playing it seated because you are seated in it and you're in this cool chair. It's got, you know, awesome little physical gears and levers and stuff to control it. But you can also just have your hands casually using the sticks. And it's got like a rear view camera or rear view mirror that you can look in and you see the face of the character in the game. And the art style in this game is very Borderlands-y. It's like that kind of hand-drawn, cel-shaded Borderlands look, which I think works very, very well for this game. Anyway, so you're in this chair and you've got this gun in front of you, kind of between your legs and your lap, and you pick up this Half-Life 2 gravity gun kind of thing. You move to the little cubby, you anti-gravity the box out of its cubby hole, and then you rotate it in front of you, and you got to make sure its size is the correct size that it was advertised, and it's not damaged, and it also is the right weight. So it'll have a weight rating that it's supposed to be, and then you see on your cart whether it actually is the correct weight or if it's overweight or underweight, and then you can label the box with this attachment to your gun. You like shoot little labels on it if it's damaged or if it, you know, is the wrong weight or whatever. And depending on those things, you will take it to a different location and drop it into a little anti-gravity thing, and it shoots out, and then it gives you a rating. It's like how quickly you did that, whether you were accurate. And then the company like gives you little rewards like, well done, you've earned a Christmas tree. But it's very like they're constantly talking to you in this very, you know, dystopian, you know, late stage capitalism, like be a good worker, you will be a good worker. And then so you're doing that, and invariably someone breaks through and says, we need your help to fight against, that's called, the word is written as jungle, but they call it Yungle, which like is, you know, kind of a play on Google, Yugle. Anyway, Yungle, whatever. Anyway, so this company, you know, is doing horrible things, and you can break through and go places you're not and see the things. So a story starts to unfold as the last work. I won't spoil any of it, but it gets really kind of cool. And it, you know, it's not subtle. It's definitely hitting you over the head with how awful this corporation is and, you know, very much, it's got traces of things that are actually happening in the world.
Yeah. But, yeah. Like right now. Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought
you take off the VR headset. You're like, oh no, I'm still in this VR. Wait. Oh
yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the, you know, I didn't think it needed as many F bombs as it has. Like at a certain point, it like just goes crazy with, you know, adult language, which I don't know.
Are they all Janet Jackson again? Is it still?
Yeah.
Is it?
Ah, they just screams at you. No, I mean, I'm not a prude, but you know, and sometimes just like, you don't need to do it. It could have been a game for kids, whatever. I guess it's very adult themes, whatever. I have very little complaints with it. You know, the sort of menial, mundane task that you start out doing and you do over and over in the game before it sort of breaks apart and is fun. You know, like it's a good,
I could do that as a job. Frank, you and I, we are gonna, let's do this for do real. It sounds good.
Sign us up. Yeah. No, but it's cool. Like you know, it's one of those things that we always talk about with VR games where things that just aren't fun usually in a video game can be fun in VR because the physical nature of doing it is fun. And that's why I have a hard time imagining this game as a 2D game, because it's like the fun is using my gravity gun with my hand and like manipulating things and pushing stuff. But anyway, and then it becomes, you know, when it really gets into it, it becomes like a, you know, a stealth game and all these other things that, it's pretty fun. I think it's clever. I think it's interesting. It's got a cool graphical style. This game is awesome. I am really loving The Last Worker in PlayStation VR 2. And that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Technique.
Yes.
Frank Ellerby, thank you for being here. It has been so much fun hanging out with you. We appreciate it.
Sitting on the couch with some friends. I really appreciate it. I love the show.
Thank you. I'm going
to check out more of it. And, you know, I just hit up my my contact and I'm like, hey, PlayStation, you know. Let's go ahead and try the VR thing. And, you know,
yeah,
let's
baby.
Forget about me crashing into a wall before. Let's just Let's just try it. So you got me interested. That's for sure. I love seeing the excitement. I played The Last Worker before, and I would think like I could start off small, like Pressure Washer Simulator or something. You know, that would be very fun to me.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and all the awesome stuff that you do online.
Yes. If you want to see my lovely stream, you can go to twitch.tv/technique. That's spelled like the word technique. Just chop off the U and E, leave the Q. And on Twitter, glorious Twitter, you can follow me at Technique TV. So the same way you spell technique, but to add T and a V. And if you're wondering, why don't you have your account? It's a long story. You know, I'm waiting for that guy to give it to me. You know, the battles of that. But other than that, you may hear my voice. There'll be some announcements coming up this year. I'm itching to tell people, but I can't. Just, you know, all that stuff legal. But yeah, if you hear my voice, I have a pretty distinct voice, I guess. I do a lot of voiceover stuff, so that should be coming out. And tomorrow, I will be cracking the mold on Twitter about Star Wars Jedi Survivor, because my goodness, yes, holding this in is too hard. But anyway, yeah, that's where you can find me. And thank you again for having me. Fantastic show, fantastic host, great vibes. And thanks for letting me be a part of the experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I have a newsletter you can subscribe to for free where I write long form about video games. You can find it at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. Also working on, as you mentioned at the beginning of this, new episodes of Feeling This. Mr. Alex Solman and I are recording a new episode this week. We are editing them. There's going to be video and audio versions in season one already available for patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Season two will also be available for everyone over there when we drop it. We're thinking we're going to do season two, part one, season two, part two, like drop five at a time, just because life is busy and we're spending time making video versions of them, but you can find them there. And you can keep refreshing twitter.com/Spicer to see when I lose my check mark.
You know, me too.
Me too.
See when that happens. It's like
I thought it was going to happen already.
No. Did you see what they did though?
No,
they updated it. It now says, because, you know, we were notable and then we became legacy. Now we're either a subscriber of blue or legacy.
Oh, gross. So now it's like,
which is worse than losing it. Yeah, it's worse than losing it.
Yeah, it is worse than losing it. You're right. Yeah,
it's just take it away.
Don't put that.
I am a transplanted Lakers fan. So, yeah, yes, I'm a bandwagon Lakers fan. I've lived in L.A. now for over a decade. So I realize that I'm still a bandwagon Lakers fan, even though being here for a decade. But God bless LeBron James when his tweets. I'm not paying for that. If you know, and Nicky, he's notoriously cheap. He's notoriously cheap, like from his signing day. It's like, what's the first thing you're going to buy? And he was like, I don't know, a 2-for-5 meal at McDonald's. I was just like, oh, God, yes.
My favorite tweet about that. I loved somebody retweeted him saying that and was like, imagine the cost of hiring LeBron James to write for your website. Now imagine that he was willing to do it for free and what you could have gotten from that. Now imagine getting him to leave because you wanted $90 a year from him. You know?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah. Jeff, what about you?
Yes, I'm on Twitter-ish. still blue-checked for some stupid reason. At Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. I've got other shows for you to listen to. The Film Cast, where we talk about movies and TV shows. We Have Concerns, a comedy science show where you can learn something and laugh along the way. And the Fan-Controlled Show, which is a sports show I do on the Fan-Controlled Sports and Entertainment Networks. All of those available wherever you get podcasts. Also, this Thursday, I believe, not to jinx it, we have tentatively said it, Lana Bashinsky and I are going to record the first DLC book club. We're talking about the first of the Malazan Books of the Fallen by Steven Erikson. It's called Gardens of the Moon. We're starting ambitious. These are some of the most highly regarded but complex fantasy novels ever. Join us on that journey. I will be promoting them They're going out to patrons. They will go on my YouTube channel, I think. But anyway, it should be good fun talking about these wacky, wonderful, very dense books. Read with us and enjoy that. So we're going to record that the first one this week. Len and I are having a ball reading the books. All right. Now that we've said all that, let's wrap things up with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Frank, do you have any suggestion to help people get through their week?
I was like, yes, I do. This is going to be a hilarious one. It's no swearing involved. But so for Christmas, I was looking for wacky things to give, you know, friends. Because you don't want to give your friends like things that you would buy your parents or someone. So we all like to play games a little too much, and we take the time to use the bathroom to get away from everyone else. So there is this lovely little gift called the toilet timer, and it is a picture of a man or woman or whatever your preference is sitting on a toilet, and it has sand in it, and you turn it upside down, and you know, you let the sand go through, and you sit there. That gets them off so they won't get dead leg from playing Marvel Snap too much on the toilet. And it's a really great gift. It's a gag gift, but it's so good because it's saved marriages. So you should definitely check it out. I think it's really great. They're very cheap. You can find them pretty much everywhere, you know, online. I'm not going to say any names because we're not going to self-promote them, you know, but yeah.
Toilet timer.
Yeah, I love toilet it. Timer. They might have a different name. I try to go with the more... you know, safe name.
Those of us with kids, that's the only time. That's my precious time. I don't want a timer. My wife was like, it took you 2 hours? Well, it was very intense. I'm sorry. Yeah. It was very.
Yeah, I lost a feeling in my leg. Sorry. I had to wait until that came back, you know? Yeah.
Amazing. That is awesome. I love that parting gift. Christian Spicer, what about you? You got a parting gift?
I think it's annually I say this. Maybe it's semi-annually, but I try to hit it every year. Spring break is over for us, for my kids here, which means it is now time for spring cleaning. It stinks. It's the worst. No one wants to do it. I'm a big fan of getting it done, not doing it, but getting it done. In this last worker age that we live in, we still had boxes from Christmas that were just like shoved in the spot we don't use. You know, it's like, oh, the girls got roller skates, put the box over here. Oh, look at this new chairs. And this is so great. Box over here. And as I'm breaking down boxes with a box cutter, and my oldest comes by and she goes, huh, still got boxes from Christmas, huh? Yeah, I do. Hope you had a good Christmas, kid. Breaking down boxes. So maybe
Santa used boxes.
No, he gives you the present and gives me the box. boxes. So if the parting gift isn't to do your spring cleaning because it stinks to do but it's worth it, it's maybe to go buy a box cutter, a new, or replace the blade in your box cutter. What a difference that can make.
I like, but I got punching them all done. Boxes. Well, I don't know what it says about me and my level of anger, but I like punching a box.
Maybe your waste collectors pick up punched boxes. Mine need to be broken down flat. I don't know how it is in Denver. Maybe they just pick up punched boxes off the side of the road.
You punch them flat. You do punch them to, yeah.
Yes, but I mean, like,
like a fist hole in it.
It's like it got to fit in your receptacle.
I do it. I punch it and then fold it flat. I punch it to break the you know.
Let me see those punch guns then. Using a knife.
It's that type of tape, you know, that paper tape. Yeah. It's easy to punch. Yeah.
I think that's the duct tape stuff. That's the best thing about Amazon is they freaking came up with a tape that's like, it holds the box together, but it's so easy to get it. I don't know how they managed to make that.
I guess I have one other parting gift to give, and that's for me to work out. I
wasn't. Yeah, join the punch club, man. We don't talk about box punch that. Club.
Yeah. Christian's like lowering his welding mask. And like, I'm just going to break down some boxes.
I get into my full Isaac armor. Yeah, I don't know how you guys do it.
My parting gift is a new show that just hit Apple TV Plus. It's called The Big Door Prize. I've watched the first 3 episodes. I am in on this show. It's got that kind of magical almost unreal, like a fable almost, that level of it's grounded, but it's got sort of a layer of magic, magical reality in it. Anyway, the idea is this town has a sort of a general store. I mean, it's literally called a general store, and I don't know towns that actually have general stores anymore, but think of a hardware store or a 7-Eleven type place. And one day nobody ordered it, but this machine shows up. It's like a photo booth machine, but it supposedly tells you your potential. The thing, you put in a quarter, you sit in the thing, you put your hand on it, and it spits out a card with a word that is your potential. And some people get really weird esoteric things like the word royalty. Other people get very, like a teacher but
it's just scripted or reality?
Scripted. Yeah, scripted. Okay. It's a fantasy show. I mean, it's it's got Chris O'Dowd is in it, but it's not really about one person. It's about the town. It's like the entire town. Everybody can't resist the lure of finding out what their potential is. And it's all these sort of stories about what would it be like if you read a card that told you what your potential was. Some people get their potential and it's like not at all what their life is right now, so it inspires them to do more things. Others get a potential that is depressing or disheartening, or is exactly what their life is. And what's that mean? Is like, I'm achieved my potential. What does that mean? Very interesting. It's based on a novel, but I'm digging the show. It's a really cool idea, and it's almost like a bunch of short stories of all the different people in the town and their interactions with this thing. The end of episode 3 is like a total gut punch. I'm very excited to see where it goes. It's called The Big Door Prize. It's on Apple TV Plus.
So E3 must have got that potential and
exactly. They achieved it. They got as far as they could. It turns out Booth Babe was as far as they could go. Yeah.
It's my calling right there, man. This year, dang.
We got a listener suggested party gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Berg from Sweden, who writes, I know this is preaching to the choir for you guys, but my parting gift is to take any chance you get to go and watch The Midnight live. Oh, yes, we love The Midnight. Last week, I had the great pleasure of attending The Midnight's live show in Stockholm as part of their Change Your Heart or Die tour. They played in a spacious event room with giant chandeliers and ornate decorations at the rustic Hotel Burns, which was such a perfect fit for the warm retro vibes of their music. In charge of getting the audience hyped up was the Belgian band Goose, which, despite their name, didn't seem all that evil. It's a reference to our Goose talks. With their dance inducing electric rock. Then The Midnight took the stage together with three amazingly talented musicians supporting the band with slick guitar solos, charismatic saxophone, solid bass, and female vocals that perfectly complemented Tyler's delightfully angsty voice. The evening was truly magical, being moved to tears by Gloria, hearing the audience humming along with every note of the saxophone in Vampires, all while dancing and singing along until every part of my body ached. There are simply too many moments of pure bliss to list them all, but trust me, if you have not had a chance to see The Midnight live, that the already amazing music reaches whole new levels when listening to it live. Thank you, Jeff and Christian, for introducing me to The Midnight. I can safely say I have never before sung the words, "If we live forever, let us live forever tonight," with more emotional honesty. Thank you, Berg. Yes, we, Christian and I, very big fans of The Midnight, friends with Tim from The Midnight, and, just think the world of music. We've both seen them live many, many times and hope to do many more. So, yes, great parting gift. Thank you, Berg. Great to hear that they're having this European tour and it's going great as well. Really awesome. All right, if you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Frank Ellerby and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is T. Ryan Arnold and Jason Sherry. You can get swag for our show, including t-shirts with our logo, mugs, you can
stickers,
get all that stuff.
Hoodies, all sorts of stuff.
All sorts of cool things. DLCswag.com, which was created by Jesse J. Anderson. Thank you, Jesse, for making the site. We also have to thank our patrons who make the show possible. Thank you for your support of the show. Our top tier patrons, the Hype Train patrons, get their names read out at the end of every episode, which Christian is going to do right now.
Back from spring break, and I'm ready to thank our Hype Train patrons, which I think now this is the only Hype Train there is. the E3 Hype Train is not. It's done. It's dead. And I know there's like, it's the summer of games. Like, that's good, but is that a Hype Train? I mean, don't get me wrong. The jingle's excellent. The jingle is excellent. But is that a Hype Train? I don't know. This is a gosh darn Hype Train. And it's the only Hype Train we have, and it exists because of people like Jason Novak, Octavian Ratziu, Christian Bravery, Jad, Peter Olberg, Michael Buck, Mike Lombardo, the Spiceman Silencer, Albert for Herald of Dios, Jonathan, Spiceman Forever, Schlepplefer, Stu Goss, Kevin Brazel, Ben, Dan Palmino, Malcolm King, Mark Gowland, Jonathan Putney, Will with 1L Harris, Chris Zacharias, Jonathan Talbert, Scooby Diesel, Adam Denby, Sasan, Dan Flanagan, Anthony Gulas, Andy Joyce, Matt Valdez, John Cisco, David Epp, the incredible Hyperboy 66, Brian Jordan, the magnificent. Like, when did Marvel start doing like incredible, magnificent, spectacular, and like some people didn't get them. It was just like the man without fear, Kevin Eddy. Like, I don't know, I guess that's a good one. I'm gonna only do Marvel, the invincible Rob Wonder Rob Dominguez. Like, that's all I can think of. They're all Spider-Man, invincible, incredible. I don't know, Dwayne T. Robinson, Tyler Buckwild Brode, Stephen T. Seifert, Joe D. Frank, Scott Lambert, Joe Rukin, Comedian, Aaron Trahan, Curtis from Louisville, Relentless Rex, Michael S., Kyle Starr, Riley Knox, Rob Ricksman, Hank Patton, Cheesy Bob, which would be like the cheese, the no cheese, please, Cheesy Bob. I don't know what Marvel would do. I don't know. Victor Venezuela, Matt Bradley, Jeff Luxack, Mitchell Ness, Jimmy Radcliffe, Scott Hughes, Jenny, Nate, Zachary White, Yick, Soren Silk, Travis Jackson, Michael Stadler, Nick Strauss-Klein, Josh Peek, Tyler Wigert, thank you for supporting this show, and thank you for allowing us to still have a Hype Train. The Hype Train lives, even if E3 dies.
All right, thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world, make it a better place.